When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the vast universe of lore behind the Mass Effect games. We'll talk about all the details you may have missed, ask the hard questions, and more.
All right, Spectres, we are back. It is time for the Mass Effect Lorecast, and I am your host, Tom, or Robots, and I'm here as well with my co-host, Sam, and Seven Legend. Welcome back, Sam. How's it going?
I'm doing pretty well. Doing pretty well. 1 week closer to getting the gaming laptop, the promised land for me.
Yes. Laptop.
Or I'm sorry, not laptop. Okay. Definitely not gaming laptop.
I thought you were changing your mind here.
That was a slip, and I swear it will not be a gaming laptop.
Okay. Okay.
I've had enough of laptops for right now.
Yes. Yes. And 1 week closer to the inevitable heat death of the universe. So we've also got that going for us. So
there we go.
Yeah. So we are talking. This is going to be our last Races of the Galaxy episode, isn't it?
Races of the Milk or the Races Milky of the Way. Milky Way specifically. Yes. So yes, technically, yes. Last one of the galaxy, but we should specify since there's an ugly step cousin to the trilogy and it happens in a different galaxy.
I mean, so. I'm a fan of the Milky Way galaxy the most because that's where I live. I don't know about you.
It has the best bars and eateries.
I prefer the sushi in this one.
So Andromeda does get a bad rap, but yes, this one is the final episode of the intelligent races of the Milky Way. Of course, there's tons of wildlife and fauna.
Unintelligent races out there. I mean, it's subjective, if you ask me.
Hence why we haven't covered humanity, but yeah.
That's true, we haven't. Oh, that's unfortunate.
I figured, like, that would just be a history course, right? If we discovered humanity. Because it's the same thing up until, like, 2100, so...
Yes. Also, for those of you watching on the live show and the video that's going up on YouTube, my hair is especially high today, and I have this wonderful curl that's like standing up on top of my head that I liken to
alfalfa.
It's kind of alfalfa-esque, and also like who's the guy that did what's the movie with Jack Skellington?
The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah, it's like that. It's like the curl that he sings and he walks up and then sings about Christmas. He like,
oh yeah,
you know what I'm talking
yeah.
about?
Yep, I know what you're talking about. Okay, anyway, yeah, it looks like that. Yep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyway, okay. So who are we talking about today?
So this week we are discussing two species who kind of take a back seat to most discussions in and about the Mass Effect universe. One of them is known being a gargly sounding hired muscle man, and the other is barely seen in the galaxy at all. But when players have gotten a view, it's been intimidating. Both of these species have reputations for being violent, and both are not spacefaring species. So if you haven't guessed it already, we are talking about the Vorcha and the Yogg. That's kind of an interesting dynamic, right? With both of them not being spacefaring, and yet they are seen throughout the Milky Way.
This is the name of my new hardcore band, by the way. The Vorcha and the Yogg.
The Vorcha and the Yogg would make a great metal band.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I can see like one Yogg frontman, and then the rest are just Vorcha, just, you know, going to town on an electric guitar.
Yeah, right, right. Absolutely. Yeah. I am the Yogg. We are the Vorcha. Yeah, absolutely. All right. So we've got a lot to go over. Where do we start?
So let's start with my favorite, the phrases that I would use to describe both of these. And for the Vorcha, I would say improvise, adapt, overcome.
Okay.
That is a quote indeed from Bear Grylls.
Wait. Isn't that, that's just like that's not the Navy. That's the, the words are not working tonight. That's the Marines.
Is it?
Yeah, I don't know. The Marines. That's what the Marines say.
So all I know is that it's from the prolific Bear Grylls memes.
Is he a Marine?
He was in the Royal. He was a British Special Forces.
Okay, well, that's a Special Forces thing then, right?
So it probably is. So the I say improvise, adapt, overcome because we will go over it in a little bit, but okay. It is perfectly applicable to the Vorcha. And there's an added little reference in there that I realized after picking it, and it's that Bear Grylls grill is actually the name of one of the Vorcha in Mass Effect 3, who you have to negotiate with in order to secure the Blood Pact's alliance in combating the Reapers.
Coincidence?
So, kind of just a weird coincidence.
Probably not. There are no coincidences in this world, my friend.
That's right. No coincidences in intentional lore writing.
Nope.
I'm not sure if the writers are then trying to say that Bear Grylls would be a Vorcha.
Probably.
That feels a lot more like an insult than praise. But as we will get into, you will come to see that the Vorcha are not really great to be likened to. As for the Yogg, this one was easy. Never underestimate your enemy. We will also get into that. But first, let's jump into the anatomical breakdown of the very porous people, the Vorcha.
Okay.
Yes. They're full of holes. They look like Swiss cheese. But if you like melted Swiss cheese a little bit and then like stretched it over like tendons and you gave the tendons very sharp edges.
Oh,
that's kind of what it would look like. They are bipedal with a humanoid body.
Oh,
go fucking figure. And so they have two eyes, two what look like ears. They have a nose holes and a mouth with razor sharp teeth. They're not inviting, and they don't look charismatic. I'll put it that way.
Okay, so do you remember the comics where the Joker like chopped his own like face skin off?
So I never saw that, but I do know what the Joker looks like in the comics, so I can imagine.
Okay, so yeah, there was a series where like he cut his own face skin off and then he like stapled it back onto his face and it was all stretched out. This is like a race of Jokers with stapling their own face skin back onto their face.
Yeah, they all look like psychos. Because their eyes are all like blood red too.
Yeah.
It's quite the appearance. They're meant to look scary, I think. They're the typical scary alien look.
Yeah, which is funny because like that was after this. So I hadn't thought about that at the time, but looking back on this, yes.
Yeah. And biologically, they appear genderless. It's never actually addressed in the lore, but they are all voiced by Mark Muir, who is also the voice of Commander Shepard. So they all have the same voice, meaning there's no like, you know, variation in more masculine or more feminine voices for the Vorcha. And in addition to that, what we do know is that they reproduce sexually and fast because they only live about 20 years. So if you only live about 20 years, you need to reproduce fast, right?
Yeah. They get like bunnies.
Yeah. Seriously. Like one a week. they evolved on a planet called Heshtok, which is a small, highly volcanic planet with a toxic atmosphere. Most of Heshtok's ecology has been eliminated through both aggressive consumption and environmental factors, which means that the planet is now covered in weeds and what the Codex calls hardy vermin.
Ooh.
Takes me back to playing Vermintide with you last night.
Yeah, those are some hardy vermin, that's for sure.
So the Vorcha come from the Ratmen world. That's yes. Basically what this is telling us.
Yeah, if there's a natural predator for the Warhammer rat people, then it's these guys.
which makes sense because of all the races in the Milky Way, these guys really, really do look like they would eat rats.
Absolutely. I mean, they have the teeth for it.
Like they would just gobble them up like Zoidberg gobbles up garbage.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
And their borderline, you know, like uninhabitable environment in on Heshtok leads to an insanely adaptable race, which is by far the most unique and interesting characteristic about the Vorcha. So first of all, they have clusters, like each individual Vorcha has clusters on the Vorcha's body of what are called non-differentiated cells. More or less, we see these in some animals on Earth, primarily flatworms.
So these are kind of like stem cells, or at least a secondary phase after stem cell.
Right. So if you weren't apprehensive enough about their appearance, now imagine that these rat-eating, cottage cheese-looking motherfuckers are covered in stem cells. And they have razor sharp teeth. And
I get this picture of them just turning into amorphous blobs and just like regenerating after they take wounds.
They're pretty ugly. And it's often a point of they are the butt end of jokes in the Mass Effect universe. Mm-hmm. And these non-differentiated cells allow them to regenerate lost limbs. But they also allow the Vorcha to adapt virtually to any environment on an individual level. So this is on an individual level, meaning that it happens very quickly. For example, if a Vorcha gets burned or sliced by, say, an Omniblade, it will develop thicker skin. If a Vorcha leaves Heshtok and settles on a planet with an even more inhospitable mixture of air, that Vorcha's lungs will adapt. And if a Vorcha settles on a high gravity planet, let's say Irune, like the Volus homeworld, it will develop stronger legs, a more resilient heart, and it would be able to breathe that ammonia mixture that no other race can breathe. And so, it can do these things in like a week.
So, okay. So if you were to like mind control these things, it would be like the perfect slave race to put on a planet that nothing else could be on, to be like your workers, like your hive workers, to just mine things and get things off places that nothing else could get to.
They are the ideal shock troops and like the ideal, just exploitable labor source.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Which the Asari actually do to the Vorcha early on after they discover the Vorcha. They say that it's to, you know, quote unquote, uplift them and expose them to the rest of the galaxy. But we will get there. So, as I said, the non-differentiated cells move to the affected areas of an injured or diseased Vorcha and they adapt in about a week. Crazy fast. But each Vorcha has a limited amount of these cells, so they can typically only adapt once per lifetime.
So they don't replace
a vastly different environment.
They don't replace those cells. That's interesting.
Right. Right. And since they only live about 20 years, they probably are going to only have to adapt to one environment at a time, unless they're a traveling stem cell salesman. I don't know.
I wonder if you could like steal the stems of the adaptable cells from one and inject it in another.
I'm sure the Solarians have tried.
Yeah, right.
I can almost guarantee that the Solarians have tried with that before. So the rapidly responding and repurposing of cells makes the Vorcha immune to all diseases. In this way, they're kind of similar to the Elder Scrolls Argonians.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In a sense, they're almost you kind of get into like mutant comic book realm with like Wolverine or something like that. Sort of.
They do look like mutant comic book villains, though.
Yeah,
they really do. They look like they should be a villain, a comic book villain's henchman.
Right.
That's just kind of how they look. Yeah. And that's kind of how they act, too, since all of them seem to have a pretty similar personality. But what all of this means with the adaptability thing is that the Vorcha don't evolve as a race. their DNA is still the same as the Vorcha who lived millions of years ago. It's still the same exact DNA because the race itself doesn't need to evolve if an individual can adapt on a moment's notice. So it's pretty interesting. I wonder if that stunted their psychological development to some extent, because we don't see a real desire to pursue hallmarks of progress like other civilizations do, like science, architecture, that kind of thing. We don't see that from the Vorcha.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. There's still some really big questions in evolution about some of that kind of thing, which I'm not going to go into here. I saw a documentary about some cells that they've been studying over almost 40 years now, and some really interesting things over the long-term evolution of these things that could play into something like this, like some of the shocking things about that. But I won't bring that up here. But yeah, that question of like, how would something like this in the real world actually affect evolution is really puzzling. But that's interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
Could it help too much?
Could it help
Combat Vet Gaming asks in chat, this is a good question. The real question, he's trying to be funny, but there's an answer to this, actually. The real question is, would Nasari mind meld with Vorcha? And in fact, sometimes they do, and they do produce offspring. And according to Morden, those offspring are lactose intolerant.
Wait a minute.
Weird detail.
That is super weird. You would think they would have cells that would like manage to deal with that. Like,
right. And why did, like, of all things, the dairy, and specifically dairy from cows, why would Vorcha know what cows are, first of all? When are they going to encounter cows?
Well, I mean, things, it doesn't necessarily just have to be cow lactose.
Sure.
All sorts of animals sure. create milk. Like lots of mammalian animals make milk.
You know what? Maybe they're allergic to the hearty vermin milk from Heshtok.
Maybe. Like,
would you try rat milk? I probably wouldn't.
Yeah, there's got to be vermin milk, right?
Oh God! Can milk anything with nipples? Combat Vet Gaming God. Says.
Do you think that? Oh.
I would go one step further and say you can milk more than that, because the last I checked, almonds do not have nipples.
Yeah, almond. I think that's just milk in name.
Yeah, no. Milk in name only. It's poser milk, as I like to tell my girlfriend, a huge fan of. Mm-hmm. She's single-handedly keeping the almond milk industry in business.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
But enough about milk and where it comes from. The Vorcha's hardiness reminds me of another animal that we have in the animal kingdom on Earth, which are called tardigrades or water bears. One of my favorites, one of my favorite tiny little animals, and they can actually survive in the vacuum of space. So maybe we should call the Vorcha space bears.
They're like horror space bears, though.
Space bears from hell.
Yeah. Like, yeah, space terror bears.
Bears in space.
Okay. All right. So I don't
know if they'd like that.
Okay. So if these are space bears, then what are the Yogg?
Then that's a good question, because the Yogg are really more bear-like. And I mean that in appearance and personality.
They are kind of cuter, sort of.
It's a low bar. It's a low bar, but the Yogg are more bear-like because these are some big, beefy boys. There's some alliteration for you. The Yogg are big, beefy boys, and they are even bigger and stronger than the Krogan.
What? Wait a minute.
That's true. Yeah, that's canon.
Wait a minute. Our battle buddies?
They are. The big, beefy boys are even burlier than the battle turtle baby buddies.
The baby battle turtle buddies?
I got through that one, and I'm proud of myself.
Oh, no.
They are stronger, and this is a surprise to Javik, who can remark that they used to be much smaller. in his cycle. So 50,000 years ago, the Yogg were around then, and they used to be smaller. The Yogg are also bipedal, but they're not exactly humanoid, kind of. Mm-hmm. Their body really reminds me of a Minotaur, because the legs bend backwards a little bit, almost like frog legs. And they have a huge upper body, similar to like a silverback gorilla.
Okay, so they have a huge upper body, but they're bipedal, big, beefy boys that are bigger than our battle turtle baby buddies.
Yes, indeed. You nailed it. They are silverbacks with reptile legs.
Oh,
as if that's not terrifying enough. And they also have horns, two large horns on their head. And their face is even more alien than the Vorcha's face, because they have four pairs of eyes designed to track prey. And that's how they kind of evolved, right? But now those eyes serve to detect subtle movements in body language, which allows the Yogg to be natural lie detectors. You cannot lie to them.
So
that's okay. Terrifying.
So wait a minute, hold on. I have to put up the image of this guy. So you can keep talking, but hold on. I have so many thoughts. Gosh darn it. Hold on. Brain, do things. Oh, I can't put it up because it's one of those weird files that won't show up on the thing. Okay. This thing both also looks like an underwater weird fish creature of some sort. Do you ever get that sense when you look at these guys?
Yes, it does.
And it also looks like what happens when some sort of alien also loses a bar fight. Like it got punched in the face too many times.
Yeah, that's accurate.
And like
it also looks like the asshole that would start a bar fight.
Yes. But it looks like it, like, okay, so if you were a four-eyed alien with a more regular looking face and then you lose the bar fight and then your buddies have to like drag you off the floor and take you out of the bar and be like, it's okay, Roger. It's all right. You'll get him next time, buddy. Let's get you home. Let's get you home. And like your face is like sunken in now and bloody. Like that's what these guys
look muttering like. I'm the shadow broker.
Right. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't stand for those.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they have deep voices too, like incredibly deep.
They're big beefy boys, of course.
Puts Bane to shame. Slant rhyme unintended. Yes.
I'm the shadow broker, Batman.
Ah, yes. The shepherd.
The shepherd.
You think you're the shadow broker, but I was born in the shadow broker.
I was molded by it.
Oh man.
The Shadow Broker is kind of like Bane. I think that's a fair comparison, but their mouth is triangular. What the fuck is that about? I don't really like that's I've never seen something with a triangle mouth. So this is a first.
Like a fish. Like a weird fish.
Yes, it's like a weird fish because they also have like gill like things on the side, right?
These things must have evolved from a fish somehow.
Yeah, I get the strong indication that they have an aquatic ancestor somewhere down the line.
I mean, we all do.
Well, maybe not
like really far back.
Maybe not the Vorcha, because nothing about them looks like it was ever aquatic.
I mean, you and I do, being as we are life forms who evolved on Earth.
And that's the first time I've been called a human in a while.
Yay! I'm flattered. Upgrade.
I've been called many things, but never a human.
Oh boy. All right. So with the Shadow Broker DLC, right? We know we know that they're not just physically dangerous, but they got some smarts. We know that.
Right. Yes, they do. And that makes them very, very dangerous. Fun fact, the Yogg didn't even exist before the Shadow Broker DLC, which is a DLC for Mass Effect 2. And the Shadow Broker sent a team to the Yogg homeworld to abduct one of them to study. And this is all, you know, part of the dossiers that you get at the end of the Shadow Broker DLC. So if you want to play it, you haven't finished it yet, and you don't want a spoiler, probably skip ahead about a minute. But the Shadow Broker sent a team to the Yogg homeworld to abduct one of them to study. And they had to kill several Yogg before finding one who actually wanted to leave their homeworld named Parnak. Well, it turns out that that particular Yogg was probably deceiving the entire Shadow Brokers team, because within a very short time, he ended up learning 17 languages with no translator assistance. And his, quote, political predictions have bettered some of the Shadow Broker's best agents. That's according to the Shadow Broker itself.
I mean, on my best days, I've only learned like 15 languages. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty good.
That's pretty good. I mean, I'll be humble. Maybe 14 languages. I've learned 14 and a half.
Threve. Threve.
What's the V? What is the V?
It was non-committal.
Three-ish.
Threve. The sheer intelligence of the Yogg, which dwarfs my own, clearly, and its raw power spooked the Shadow Broker enough that the Shadow Broker immediately tried to issue an order to eliminate the Yogg before it could become a bigger threat. And so even in acting in what the broker thought was immensely proactive, the order came too late because the Yogg killed the Shadow Broker while he was sending out the message. So the Yogg then became the next Shadow Broker. And so this is how we know what the Yogg's lifespan must be at the very least, because the Yogg served as the Shadow Broker for 60 years until Shepard came along and sent him to his grave.
Okay, so two things here. Shadow Broker is basically the Highlander, because there can only be one.
There can only be one.
Right, you kill him and then you become him. Two, maybe it's the eyes, because the brain is like the GPU, and so you have to have more eye. You have more eyes. You need more processing power, right? So more eyes means upgrade. You got to RTX on that thing. So he's definitely got like a 3090 in there.
At least.
So he's got RTX on. So that's why he can learn so many languages.
He's got quite a rig going on, mm-hmm. and in the inside that beefy big boy body.
That beefy big boy body with the big, big old rig.
So I bring this up because the Yogg are the definition of apex predators. Their ability to pose such a threat to the races of the Milky Way is impressive, especially considering that they haven't even left their homeworld yet.
Sorry, I got distracted by the comment in chat from Mark 10 Gamer, who said, "If that's true, Tom, spiders should be fucking powerful ASF." And I said, "Heck yeah, Shelob." There you go. So sorry, what did you say? I totally missed that.
I said, it's just impressive how powerful the Yogg are and how much of a threat they pose to the Milky Way races, because they haven't even developed the technology to leave their own homeworld yet.
Well, yeah, that's kind of a contradiction, right? Right. Okay. So besides the Shadow Broker, the Shadow Broker Yogg, right?
Right.
Then they're all on Parnak?
Yeah. So they haven't even advanced past the 20th century Earth technology. So they're not spacefaring. They're on the cusp, but they're not there yet. And in fact, neither are the Vorcha.
Okay. So then we're going to have to dive into their history and with how the console, we're going to have to dive into their history with the console. This sentence doesn't make any sense.
You are right. So I'll take the heat for this one, because what listeners don't know is that this is according to the show notes that I put together.
This was the transition to the mid break that he set up so we could set up the transition to the mid break in hint at what you were going to hear next. And this sentence doesn't make any sense.
I should have gaslighted you and been like, are you having a stroke?
I'm so drunk right now, guys. All right. So wait, I'm going to put this on you. So what are we talking about when we get back from the mid break?
We're gonna talk about how exactly the Vorcha and the Yogg even like began their interactions with the Council and the Milky Way races.
What? Something smells like toast. We'll be right back.
Message coming in. Patching it through.
I am sovereign, and this station is mine. I like the sound of that.
Do you like adventure?
Yeah.
Do you like laughing?
Yeah.
Would you like to listen to a group of people you don't know, play D&D, and reference retro pop culture you vaguely remember? Excellent. You're going to love Committee Quest. We play D&D in the world of Amaran. We use adventure modules and supplements made by people in the community. We also have a sweet synthwave backing track. Come and join us on our adventure.
Volume 1 has been completed. Volume 2 coming the end of January.
You can find us on iTunes, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
All right, so thank you guys for hanging out with us. This has been a wacky episode, but thank you for being here. We have some patrons to thank, and we've got a new review to talk about as well. And hey, Ann Seven, how do you feel about our patrons?
Oh, I love them. As I do every week.
Yum, yum, yum.
That sounded sarcastic, but
love
it wasn't.
Patrons. Well, thank you to all of our patrons, and especially thank you to our tier 5 patrons who get a thank you and a call out every week. Sovereign and our new upgraded Stagger and Stumble tier 5 patrons. So thank you to Stagger and Stumble. And a reminder that you guys have a week left to get your limericks in. We have a secret donator who has decided to give away a guest slot on the end of the month patron episode. So that means that one of you who submits a limerick is a 5-line poem. You can look it up. They're really easy to write. All it has to do is be about a Mass Effect topic, and you can just write one. You can drop it into the Discord. There's some info in there. And just if you aren't on the Robots Radio Discord, it's in the show notes. There's a link. You can just simply even just search Robots Radio Discord. It pops right up at the top of Google search. Join the Discord. Make sure you follow the instructions when you join. You go into the channel that says rules, and there's a few other things on that channel, but it basically starts with rules, and then you choose the little emojis for all the different things you like. So you can choose the Mass Effect Lorecast emoji, and then make sure you choose like the fun ones and like the personal stuff and personal and sharing stuff. And that will also include the poetry section. You go into the poetry channel, you'll see some limericks for Mass Effect stuff. You paste your little limerick in there that you've written, and our secret donator will pick their favorite limerick, and you might be able to guest on the end of the month show. That favorite limerick will be picked by next week's show on the 22nd, and on the 29th is when our patron show will be. So that means that you will get to join one of, let's see, 10 of our patrons. And so you don't even have to be one of our patrons in order to join us on the show that week. So that's super awesome. And there are 36 total patrons. So thank you guys. Maybe we can hit 40 by the end of the month. That would be amazing. Wouldn't that be awesome, N7?
Oh, yeah.
40 patrons.
I think we might be able to surpass that. Maybe 42.
That's 42?
Yeah.
The answer to life, the universe, and everything?
Because before, I underestimated our patrons, and I'll never make that mistake again.
Sounds fair. So thank you to all of our patrons. If you have enjoyed the show, if we have helped you get through a work day or your commute to work or a workout or anything else involving work, or even just, you know, doing your laundry or, you know, cleaning their house or anything at all, and you want to thank us, or you would like to get ad-free episodes or join us on a future episode of the show or anything at all, go to patreon.com/MassEffectLoreCast and check out all the different tiers and the ways that you can subscribe and help us out. And we would love the support. This helps me do this full time. I do this show and a bunch of other shows. This helps support N7 Legend do this on the side. And we really, really genuinely do appreciate the support. So thank you for that. And beyond that, you can share it with your friends. You can leave us ratings and reviews like this one from King Oblivion in the United States, who writes, "This is my favorite podcast on the Citadel." Didn't we read this one last week? I think so. We had a new one. Did we read this one?
I think we did. I thought I saw a new one on either Chartable or Podbay. Let me try and get that up right now.
I think we read this one. Recently found this podcast. Ever since, otherwise, yep, yeah, we already read this one. You're tricking me. He's tricking me. You're a tricker.
I'm a sneaky one.
You're a sneaky one. I don't see any new ones. He's tricking me. Well, then, fine. Well, maybe you find that one, but that's all I got for the middle of the show. So let's get to the rest of the show. Thanks. Thanks, patrons. Love you guys. Bye.
Spit it out, or are you trying to build suspense?
You're so dense, sir. Obviously, I do not know as much about human relationships as I thought.
All right, we are back. Did you find it?
Yes, we are, and no, I didn't. I know what I did. So I confused. We have another new review for the Xbox Game Pass show.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, and that one is on Podbay. So
all right.
Confused the two.
Yeah, that's coming up tomorrow night. And we have a special guest on that show tomorrow night, Lady Devin, who is the social media manager. That's her title, right? For Fallout. And she's going to be talking about Boyfriend Dungeon, which I got a chance to play because she made me do it. And so that's going to be awesome. We'll be talking about that tomorrow night and a bunch of other stuff. So, yeah, join us here on Robots Radio's Twitch channel, twitch.tv/Robots Radio. Also, you know what? We've got a planet. You want to talk about our planet?
Yeah, let's talk about Flet. That's the name of the planet.
Flet.
Flet. F-L-E-T-T. So Flet, located in the Eagle Nebula. I wanted to choose this planet because it's perfectly relevant to the Vorcha. So I'll just go ahead and read the description here to our listeners. It is uninhabitable by most species. Flet is home to the Blood Pact's Vorcha training and breeding grounds. The thick atmosphere is nearly all nitrogen and lacks oxygen, which poses no hazard to the Vorcha. Needing little but imports of food and water, Vorcha mercenaries and mercenaries-to-be train religiously to overpower and kill whoever the company is at war with this time. Travel advisory, Flet's spaceports are wholly owned subsidiaries of the Blood Pact Mercenary Company, a corporation undergoing numerous criminal investigations for capital crimes. Civil traffic to Flet is strongly discouraged. So,
with a name like that, you'd never guess it.
Yeah, Flet. Sounds innocuous, but it's not. And I love how the Codex refers to the Blood Pact as a company, like a corporation. Well,
that's what I meant. Like, with a name like that, Blood Pact, you'd never guess that they were undergoing an investigation with a corporation named that.
Why are you guys named Blood Pact? Oh, we donate a lot to the Red Cross.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. All right. So let's get back to these two wonderful, wonderful species. We know a lot about their biology, and we also know that they're both non-spacefaring. So, so how did they enter the galactic stage then?
So the Vorcha are discovered by the Asari, as I mentioned earlier, who then bring them to other worlds as a source of cheap, quick learning labor. And now, I don't mean to say that quick learning equivocates to being intelligent, to being hyper smart like the Salarians are. It's just that they have a very fast lifespan. So they learn these skills in addition to their adaptability very quickly. They can fine tune their motor skills and nervous systems so that they can provide a source of cheap labor that no one would get anywhere else.
So they're like, Combat Vet Gaming says they're street smart, not book smart, but I would modify that a little bit to say they're adaptable smart. They are biologically smart.
Yeah. They have a big hindrance in, I guess, development, in that they don't organize well, and they're so aggressive and territorial that really gets in the way of their progress. But we will, we're getting ahead of ourselves. So we'll talk about that a little bit later when we talk about governments and militaries.
Okay.
So ever since the Asari decided to bring the Vorcha to other worlds, the Vorcha that do leave their homeworld, they just hitch rides on visiting ships, usually without the captains knowing, and then they breed at their destination. That's how
kind of like the rodents that we talked about.
Yes, very similar to rodents. And ironically, the Mass Effect universe refers to the presence of Vorcha as a pestilence. Like they consider them no more than a blight, because like as one I think security guard on Omega puts it, like Shepard asks, what are the Vorcha planning? And the security guard more or less says, planning. If the Vorcha could ever plan, we'd all be fucked.
Yeah.
So they can't. And that kind of gives a little bit of a, you know, like a insider's look into how the other races view the Vorcha. Whether that's merited or not, we'll decide maybe after the episode. And fun fact, the Vorcha were actually supposed to have a much more independent and fleshed out backstory about their own history, about their own technology, how they developed faster than light travel. But project director Casey Hudson decided that it did not fit their appearance and culture, and so it was scrapped. This tells me that the Vorcha were indeed meant to be polished space orcs, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, the bad guy minions who only need enough background so as to not appear out of place.
Okay. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It's like they were downgraded.
Mm. Yeah. It's kind of the opposite of what happened with the Elder Scrolls and orcs in the Elder Scrolls, right? Because those used to just be an enemy, and then they kind of made them into a playable race with like their own full history.
Right. Well, or a more complete look would be that Mass Effect is at the stage the Elder Scrolls was back in Arena and Daggerfall, which is the time where the orcs were at the stage the Vorcha are here. Right.
Yeah.
Before they were fleshed out and kind of upgraded to a, okay, we'll make them a real race now where they actually have a real history and a real, you know, whatever.
Sales aside, that is completely comparable. Exactly. I think.
Yeah. Wow. Like if so. Lore, from a lore perspective for specifically this race only.
Jessica Starr says goblins at best. They are kind of space goblins.
Yeah. They're kind of space goblins. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they're space goblins. That's a really good metaphor or analogy. But as for the Yogg, the council doesn't make first contact with them until the year 2125 of the current era, which context is 58 years before the events of Mass Effect 1, but that's still 32 years before the council makes contact with humanity.
Yeah, and that's still like 104 years from now.
Yeah,
I'm gonna
it's
have
just
to,
so short of a time.
I'm gonna have to live to be 146.
I mean, you better get cracking on your V8 and eat a lot of carrots or something. I don't know. Become a vegan, subsist entirely off of vegetarian animal waste. I have no idea.
You think we're gonna develop like the Futurama thing where you just put your head in a jar?
I hope not. This seems more like a punishment than it does a privilege.
Yeah.
But the council makes first contact with the Yogg after surveying planets. They send a council diplomat team there. But we see zero Yogg in Mass Effect 1. Because of what happens to this council diplomat team that goes there, the council has declared their homeworld after the fact completely off limits to any interaction whatsoever.
What? Okay. What happened?
So put simply, the Yogg got pissed off when a team of the diplomats greeted them as equals and not overlords. So the Yogg killed them all.
Oh, okay.
Cool, right?
Cool.
It's because of this incident that the council generally considers the Yogg to be too obsessed with control, power, domination, and immature to integrate into galactic society.
All right. So, okay. But if the council has an embargo on all relations with the Yogg, why do the Salarians have one captive at the STG facility in Mass Effect 3?
So this is a pretty cool little tidbit that's easy to miss. It turns out that the Salarian, that the STG, kind of like the Salarian CIA, is planning to uplift the Yogg and use them as a further use them to further their political goals, but with plausible deniability. So in other words, to do their dirty work. And then the Salarians, if caught, can say, well, we didn't have any hand in that. We didn't do that. That's awful. Who would do such a thing?
Right.
And then Cerberus attacks the base in Mass Effect 3 on Sirkesh, in pursuit of the Krogan female, and the Yogg manages to escape. So the Yogg that was held captive has escaped on Sirkesh, and no one knows where the hell it goes.
Yeah.
As Morden would say, problematic.
Problematic. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that, yes. And as we've established, powerful and very smart. RTX
Apex
on.
Apex Predator. Triangular Mouth.
RTX on. Learns languages very quickly. Problem.
Gorilla body with fish legs. Yep.
I mean, this guy's going to stand out wherever he goes, but clever.
He's definitely not a Salarian. But seeing him disguised as one, like trying to act like he is one, would be hilarious. As anyone who has played Mass Effect 2 and 3 will tell you, we know both of these races are extremely aggressive. For the Vorcha, it seems to be ingrained in their culture, not their biology. Combat is their language, both metaphorically and literally. Most of their communication with other Vorcha is nonverbal and aggressive.
Like middle schoolers.
It's a little bit like if you had a playground full of middle schoolers who are all working out their own power dynamics,
like boys, all of middle them school are boys. Mute. Let's be specific here.
Yeah. All of them are mute though.
Yeah.
So it's all nonverbal. It's the weirdest silent film you've ever seen. There's no plot. But as the Codex tells us, the lack of resources on Heshtok has resulted in a tight-knit clan-based society in which rival clans wage constant war against one another for control of scarce resources. They constantly fight each other in fierce competition over basic necessities. Now, this is important, I think, to bring up because it kind of gives us an inside view as to what is going on, if anything at all, on the Vorcha homeworld. Why have they not progressed? Why have they not advanced the same way as others have when they've been around for apparently, you know, like the species itself has been around for millions of years, and they haven't progressed. So I guess I realized why the Reapers haven't harvested them. Right. Because they weren't spacefaring and they weren't really capable of large scale organization, but they do tend to live in communities. And they get very territorial. So when one community gets too large, younger Vorcha split off to settle into another uninhabited place, which is why, combined with their wide parameters for acceptable places to live, they tend to take up the space in the dank, dark, you know, seedy corners of the Milky Way where no one else can or will go.
Mm-hmm. They are totally space orcs.
Yeah.
I mean, right. Sauron would be totally at home with these guys.
They're ostracized. They're seen as a blight. They live where no one else wants to live.
Absolutely. The dark, dank corners of the world. They mm-hmm. are constantly infighting, but yet are organized enough to kind of build a culture, to manufacture things for themselves, to like... Yeah, absolutely. They also are genderless and yet somehow can continue to procreate. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Mommy, where do Vorcha come from? We genuinely don't fucking know.
Yeah, who knows? So, but they all seem to be male-ish. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, they all seem to be male-ish. And fun fact, I think Mark Meer had said during an Instagram live video about his technique for recording the Vorcha voice. He had to do it at the end of every like recording session because it would hurt his voice so much to do the gargly sound. And I think I'm not sure if he was joking when he said this, but he said that he would have half of his mouth full of water to facilitate the gargly sound to that it makes it to sound like the Yogg. I'm sorry, not the Yogg, the Vorcha.
The Vorcha, yeah.
And so, yeah, the Vorches sound absolutely horrible. Their voice is like nails on a chalkboard. And it's always like, it starts off with a growl, it seems, most of the time. And then they just walk away and they never say bye, which is, it's like, okay, whatever.
Right.
But, you know, they're mostly nonverbal anyway. So for the Yogg, you know, we have two examples that we've already mentioned to go on as to why they're violent, or, you know, like to explain their violence. The first contact that they had with the Citadel is one example. And then we also have the Yogg's takeover of the Shadow Broker. I'm hesitant to give any passing judgment on the Yogg as a whole race, because those are two isolated incidents. And what if they only reached contact with one nation of the Yogg planet?
Yeah,
and like everyone else on the Yogg planet is like, well, those guys are dicks.
Or we're in very desperate situations.
Right.
Yeah, it's not enough individual instances with which to derive any overarching, you know, results. Like, you can't really draw a conclusion from that.
Right. If I was going to go with a headcanon, I would say that the council tasked the Salarians inspectors with monitoring the Yogg homeworld. But there's no evidence to actually suggest that in the lore. Not that I know of. So that's just my opinion. It seems logical. Those are the two examples that we have to go on with the Yogg. And then there's also the captive escaping the STG facility. But if I was being held captive by the STG, I'd probably be pissed off too and take someone out with me when I escaped, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if we can count that as characteristic, but sure. Domination does, however, seem to be integral to Yogg culture, because according to the Codex, which, by the way, is written by a human, I'm pretty sure the Codex is entirely from a human's point of view, because it's referred to as general issued to Alliance personnel. So according to the Codex, Yogg society is built around pack mentality. A group of Yogg will not cooperate until a single leader has attained dominance through either social maneuvering or brute force. Once the leader is established, the defeated Yogg do not hold a grudge, and former rivals serve their new superior loyally. Due to this mentality, the concept of equality is offensive to them.
Interesting. So it's
don't trigger them with your talks of equality.
Yeah, this is almost like, this is very Pac-Man. This is like dogs.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you could say that.
Like once or okay. Anything with like a pack mentality, like apes, or as soon as a leader is defined, then what the leader says goes. And there are like everything else. You do what the leader says. Nothing else matters. You follow the leader. Past grudges hold no bearing. You do what the leader says.
Yeah, I would imagine it goes something similar like that in the Yogg homeworld. But again, I want to pump the brakes for what we do know, because what we do know is very, very limited about the Yogg.
Yeah.
However, we can extrapolate this. We can definitely say that the Yogg are organized. Their homeworld is organized, although maybe the council and the rest of the galaxy doesn't understand how or why or what motivates them. They're organized. So for better or worse, they know how to do it, which is the extent of what we know about their civics. But it's also more than we can say for the Vorcha. Because as far as any self-governing bodies, the Vorcha don't really have institutions. The anthropologists of the Mass Effect universe theorize that it's difficult for the Vorcha to keep organizations that last longer than one lifetime, which is 20 years for them, due to their aggressive nature, their short lifespan. And personally here, I think it's because they lack any interest in science and progress. The reason for that could be hotly debated, but I think that's pretty evident, I think, from the game world. Every time we see and meet, Vorcha. It is worthy of noting, though, that Vorcha are not without ambition. And the Vorcha that you work with to secure the Blood Pack's help in your fight against the Reapers is very eager to usurp the guy who was in his position before him as leader of the Blood Pack. Right.
Yeah, it's like yeah. it's like selfish ambition over the benefit of the group, which seems to deter any long-term progress.
Yeah, all of them seem incredibly selfish, the Vorcha. And that's not me passing judgment. That's just, you know, an observation.
Just the nature of the individuals. Right.
Again, they're space goblins.
Yeah. And that makes sense. Any society that sees the individual over the collective is not going to progress as the collective. It will tear itself down. There will be no progression in the long term.
The millennia of incessant warfare for the Vorcha, combined with their adaptability and just sheer bloodthirst, I think, makes them prime time recruiting targets for the Blood Pact mercenary group, which we mentioned earlier. But they're not exactly bright, right? But they do reproduce quickly. And the gang uses them as shock troops and cannon fodder, which we mentioned. You know, they're highly adaptable. They learn skills very quickly. Mm-hmm. They can survive in almost any environment because they are like, you know, the tardigrades of the Mass Effect universe. So, of course, mercenary groups would be super down to recruit them. Oh, and by the way, you don't even have to provide them with room and board because they're cool, like chilling in the corner.
Yeah, right. Yeah, just give them a floor to sleep on. They're cool.
Yeah, exactly. They don't seem to care, really. I don't think luxury is a huge thing in the Vorcha economy. By the way, when I was researching this, not a single damn thing I could find about a Vorcha economy. I don't think that they have one, So
give them a rat to chew on and a floor.
I really wonder what they get paid in.
Rats.
Like, how do you pay a Vorcha?
Rats.
Trident layers?
Rats. Rats and floors.
Rats. Yeah, it's more and more rats. The more rats, that's how they determine like their social hierarchy. Who has the most rats?
Yeah.
I have three rats. How many do you have?
That was a pretty good Vorcha. That's a pretty solid Vorcha impression.
Hey. Hire me, BioWare.
And you know, since the Vorcha don't have any government, they haven't really raised any of their own armies or fleets, so to speak. There's enough Vorcha in the Blood Pack that I guess you could consider that a Vorcha army, but it's not because it's a multi-race, you know, mercenary corporation. And the Vorcha seem to be incapable of organizing and coexisting long enough to really form any army or militia or any type of power group that lasts longer than one lifetime and can, you know, ally enough people that it grows in power. That doesn't seem to be possible for the Vorcha. Whether that's cultural, whether that's innate, I don't know. I don't think there's enough evidence to suggest either way. We don't know much, if anything, about the Yogg's military, but we do know that they aren't being targeted for harvesting by the Reapers in Mass Effect 3, per Admiral Hackett, because they're not a spaceflight species yet. They're close, but they're not there yet. So considering their apex predator status and the fact that they are nearly done constructing their first spaceship, they are expected to be the dominant species in the Milky Way, assuming Shepard fails and everyone ends up getting harvested.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh. Next cycle run by Yogg.
Weird.
How do you feel about that?
Triangle mouths everywhere. Well, RTX on. That's what I say. Hey, Jessica Starr has some interesting questions.
Sure.
Are there many reports of how the Yogg fared during the Reaper invasion?
So they actually didn't get invaded. The Reapers left them alone. And it's Admiral Hackett's best guess that they were left alone just because they weren't advanced enough. My personal guess is that they were left alone because how many Yogg actually know about the existence of the Reapers? Two? One? Because Shepard killed the Shadow Broker. So maybe one, the Yogg that was on the STG facility. That's it. I don't think they're going to bother with the Yogg. I think that the way that the Reapers like their cycles to go, it seems like the Reapers, until the most recent cycle with humanity and the Asari and whatnot, it seems like the Reapers enjoy having a clear dominant species of every cycle, doesn't it? Or at least maybe that's just convenient writing. I'm not sure.
I mean, it makes an easy target. It makes a
predictable pathway of evolution.
It consolidates everything.
Mm. They do like patterns, and they do like races to evolve the way they want them to evolve. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Jessica Starr also says they're developed enough that they would be harvested even if they're pre-split spaceflight, I think. Yeah, so that's a good point. There are flavor texts in the Mass Effect lore on side planets that talk about other unnamed races of aliens that were completely exterminated by the Reapers in previous cycles, but they were not spacefaring species. So I wonder what the exact cutoff is, or if the Reapers were totally full of shit when they talked to Shepard on the Citadel, and it's all arbitrary, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Good question.
And that's assuming that it wasn't just a, you know, writing inconsistency.
Right. Right. Well, we got to wrap up the show. Interesting look at these two kind of lesser known races. These guys, you know,
if we get
some more info on these guys in Mass Effect 4, that would be pretty cool.
I would love to see more info in them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, because we just don't have a lot to go on right now, to be honest. And they don't really make an appearance in Andromeda at all. And speaking of Andromeda, next week we're going to be talking about Andromeda's sentient races. So we're going to be talking about the Angara, the Jardon, and the Ket. And it may be, you know, a longer than normal episode, but we're going to try to fit all of them into one episode since there's too little to talk about each one individually, I think.
Yep. Yep. And then we'll be wrapping up this month with our patron episode. So
that's right.
Be chatting about that. I've seen some conversations going on the Discord about what we will be conversing about in 2 weeks. So get your opinions in there. Share what you think we should be discussing. Some conversation about continuing the conversation about the end of the trilogy and some thoughts on that. So share what you think. And we will be back next week. Sam, you got anything else you want to share about? Anything else going on?
Well, just to reiterate the awesome Game Pass episode that we got coming up tomorrow on the Xbox Game Pass show. I'm going to try to play some Boyfriend Dungeon.
You're gonna
tomorrow
play it too?
I'm going to try to play some before the episode so that I have some valuable things to contribute to the conversation.
All right.
I did play a couple of new Game Pass games that I'm going to be, you know, excited to talk about, but they are small titles, so they're not going to take a long time.
Cool. Yeah. MK10 posted a review for us. So,
awesome.
We'll pull that up.
Awesome.
Yeah. I played some too. Lady Devin is going to be joining us. So she will be our guest this week, which is super fun. And, we've got all the regular stuff tomorrow night. Also the Witcher Lorecast will be tomorrow night. And, I was looking at some of the rankings for podcasts, today, and this show, the Fallout Lorecast, the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, and the Witcher Lorecast are all in the top 100 podcasts for video games. We have
what?
We have four top 100 shows. What? And the Xbox Game Pass show is in the top 200. What?
Crazy talk.
This is nuts. This is crazy. Yeah. And who was it? What's the guy's name? Do you remember the guy's name from Game Informer? Followed our Twitter account. The
I don't remember his name. Mr. Reiner. I don't remember his
Reiner.
First name.
What is his title?
He's the editor-in-chief.
Editor-in-chief of Game Informer.
For those of you who don't follow print media, that's like pretty high up there.
Pretty high up there. Yeah, follow the Witcher
like
Lorecast.
Near the top.
And the Mass Effect Lorecast. So hello to you. Thank you for following us. And fun times. We've been having a great time. Thank you to everybody who has been checking out the shows. We really do enjoy you guys being here. We especially enjoy you when you join us during the live shows. And thank you to all of you guys, all of the live show people, all of you listening on your devices. We love you guys. Thank you for being here. We will see you next week. And until then, have a safe trip through the galaxy. Watch out for those more nefarious races with big chunky teeth that look like Swiss cheese. They might be out to get you. Stay safe. We'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast, or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Are you into the cyberpunk tabletop games or excited for Cyberpunk 2077? Are you looking to brush up on the lore, stay up on all the latest news, and talk about the game when it comes out? Check out the Cyberpunk Lorecast, a show from Robots Radio with me, your host, Robots. We'll go over all the details you need to know about the world, characters, and story of Cyberpunk. Available on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey there, my name's Jameson, or Big Cat.
And I am Brenna, or Mother Goose.
And together, we are the hosts of The DL, Weekly Gaming News.
Each week, we bring you the top stories from last week, as well as something you might have missed.
Our goal is to start a conversation about what's going on in the world of gaming.
And every week, we have a special guest join us in the chat room, where we discuss a different gamer-related topic and learn more about our guests and the 60-second download.
And if that isn't enough, we also have Slim Jims.
So come and hang out with us every week and join in on the conversation.
Good luck and have fun, everybody.
And remember, keep your goose loose.